So we want to shift now to case three, and Kenny, you're a 59-year-old man, and again, every one of these cases you can spend like 2 hours on. There's just so many things that happen to these patients. But we want to focus really on the issue that actually was touched on in terms of the question we had about experimental therapies, because, you know, it's like we were talking about this morning. We were talking about TDM1 and HER2-positive breast cancer, and, you know, the faculty, you know, Hope Rugo is standing there going, well, you know, we have this patient, and the patient was dying. We gave the patient TDM1. They had tried everything else, and, you know, they improved. They got better. It's very challenging for us in oncology to know, you know, when is a drug, you know, it's maybe getting ready to be approved, but, you know, maybe it's not approved, but we know it can bring value, and when do we try to get our patient into a trial? And this man, a younger man, you know, 59 years old, I want you to focus on, Kenna, when he presented to you, and he was sent to you to be put on a trial, and I want to focus on that moment when he came to you, kind of in the middle of your disease. What had gone on before, and what was he thinking, and what was his doc thinking when they sent him to you?
He had been on, at the time, most FDA-approved agents already, and they had exhausted those options for the most part. So his local oncologist referred him to a tertiary center for consideration of a clinical trial. And the point I would like to make with this, with your patients, if you have the opportunity to refer them for a clinical trial, do it more upfront. It's not always a last hope type of thing. Our patients can live with their disease. They can coexist with their disease. It's not quickly deadly, and you need to think about what are you going to give them 1 through 8 regimens. If you refer them for a clinical trial up front, then it keeps the FDA agents held in your hand like an ace, and you never want to play your ace before you have to play your ace. If you can put patients on trials throughout their continuum of care, it will benefit them. The carfilzomib clinical trial was a 12-month trial. This bought this gentleman 12 months. And at the end of it, he was a partial remission, and that partial remission did him for quite a while. So patients will be hopped from treatment to treatment. They'll have periods of time where they're disease-free or disease-controlled. So refer them quickly and judiciously for clinical trials. There's a lot of options out there.
You know, I'm just going to throw out there that sometimes it's not that easy to refer somebody. There might be, you know, all kinds of impediments, geographic impediments, financial impediments. And I think what we want to try to differentiate is, when is there something out there that really is going to make a difference? Now, this man, he received, we talked before about bortezomib, the proteasome inhibitor, a new type of proteasome inhibitor, a little bit different, irreversible binding. And he came to you to try that, but he had previously had neuropathy as a result of receiving a proteasome inhibition, specifically bortezomib. What was his neurologic situation when you started the carfilzomib, and what was his state of mind in terms of receiving a drug that the class of which has been associated with this?
He was very nervous. He had grade 1 neuropathy. He had some numbness and tingling, which was ever present. It did not really interfere with function, but it was ever present. And he was very nervous about a same class drug and worrying that it would exacerbate it. In fact, when he went through the trial, it did not exacerbate for him, and it stayed at the same level.
And so he just had numbness and tingling, no
yes.
Motor problems, no pain.
No motor problems.
And it stayed that way.
And it stayed that way.